Welcome to Holden Village. Today in the fireside room is Rosie Betzal, and the title of her topic is Do I Act Nonviolently? So let's listen in on Rosie.
I'm Rosie Betzal, and most of my adult life I have spent about a fifth of my time either working on as a political organizer or helping groups do their work better so that that groups that are doing social change work or such as Women's International League for Peace and Freedom and Fellowship of Reconciliation, so that instead of me necessarily being directly involved in the work, I've helped other groups, which I thought could spread my energy a little better. And my bias is basically that if our world, our whole world, doesn't change and really begin to study and develop nonviolent ways to solve the conflicts that are going on, then we're in trouble. And a lot of these nonviolent steps have to take place on a personal level as well as a societal level. And I'd like everybody to introduce themselves, and if you're not long-term staff or whatever, would you tell one thing that you're excited about after you leave Holden, about doing after you leave Holden? And I'm trying to think. I'm going to go visit my mother-in-law and father-in-law, and I haven't seen them in a long time, so I'm excited about that. Okay. Today I thought we'd start by making our own definition up of what active nonviolence is. There are many ways that we all act positively and nonviolently in our daily life. Jesus defined a lot of the ways that we should act nonviolently for us. But there are actions that each of us take that differ from each other. And so my way of defining nonviolence might not be someone else's definition of nonviolence. For example, some people are absolutely comfortable with spanking their kids. That's the way discipline needs to happen. And other people just feel that they shouldn't even really yell at their kids. They have to think of some other way to do it. And maybe at some big public demonstration, some people feel it's just really fine to rant, rave, and scream at who's ever talking, like they screamed at Hillary in Seattle the other week. While other people feel that if you do that, you are you're not respecting the person that you want to change the mind of, and that you want to act to them in a way that you would like them to act to you at all times. Yeah. So I'd just like to get your idea. If I say the word active nonviolence, what do you think of? Put it up here. We're going to do a brainstorm, and just any words that come to mind, positively or negative, are fine. One of the I think the War Resisters League's definition of active nonviolence is it's a way for people to act on a problem and on the problems and challenges around them without emotionally or physically damaging anyone. And we take this even further to mean that governments should act in this way too. We assume that people basically do not want to hurt each other and that violence is a destructive reaction to conflict. Nonviolence can be either a tactic to accomplish a goal, or it can be a basic philosophy of life that a person lives by. It's a way for people to act where they act toward other people as they would like to be acted upon by the others. And it's also a belief that the people who you are acting toward have as much in them that is good as you do. And that I really liked it, that someone came up with the word respect, because you have to respect people in order, and that's like one of the basic key concepts of nonviolence. I want us to do sharing, and I think that we could do it in the whole group because it's a small group. And I'd like you to take a minute to think back a little bit over your life and come up with an example of some conflict that you were in or a conflict that you came upon where it could have gone to be more violent than it was. But because of your actions, or maybe if you can't think of one of your own examples, someone else's actions, that the conflict toned down, became a nonviolent conflict instead. And it can be anything from when you were a little kid on the playground to anything. It's not a contest to see who has the best incident. But I want you to think about, when you think about your incident, think about what made your response nonviolent and what inside you helped you to do that. What enabled you to act in that particular way at that particular time? So why does everybody take a minute? Yes?
I know this was before my wife and I were married, but we were in Minneapolis on an evening on the street with her sister. There's three of us in my car, and we had stopped at a stoplight. And a couple of guys that were in the next car put it in my front left tire and said it was flat, which I knew it wasn't, so I gave them a flippant remark about, don't worry about it, and that ticked them off. And I knew they were ticked off, so I took a right turn at the light, and I wanted to go stewards. They decided they didn't want to do more than that, so they came after me with their car, and after going around the block back to where we were again, with all kinds of obscenities being heard at us and so forth, I now end up behind them at the same light. And all I had was a crescent wrench in the car and the two women. And I didn't know what they were going to do. Basically, they finally, light turned green, they stayed there, I stayed there, and they decided to finally go on my somewhere else. But I basically left them alone. I basically ran, I was outnumbered, basically. Mm-hmm. That's why I left.
Yeah.
It was not a, it was one of those things where no looks when it happened.
Yes.
That was 35 years ago.
Yeah.
Nowadays, it's probably been a gun in a car. And,
it would have been even more scary.
They probably would have shot at me before I even got half a block away from me.
Could have.
But that was when I first started.
Yeah. So you basically just tried to leave the situation alone when you realized what was going on. That was good.
Yeah. I didn't take their bait, and I took them out.
Uh-huh.
They wanted to get out of the car, I guess, until they looked at
them. Yeah. That was a very good reaction that you had. Would you have changed it in any way? I don't see why you there would
no,
be any reason
no,
to change that reaction.
That's
good.
I don't feel comfortable fighting with anybody. No, I've never really been in a fist fight with anybody in my whole life. I've never been in those situations where I seek fights or wish I was in a fight.
Mm-hmm. Why is that, do you think? That's a good reason. Very good reason. Very good reason.
I think a lot of that's from the way you were brought up, though, too.
Uh-huh.
If you've seen violence, if that's the way people around you handle it,
then you do.
As a kid, there's something ingrained in you that says that's the way it should be. That's where you're from, isn't that?
Yeah. So luck has something to do with it, or, you know, the family of origin that you're from.
Sure.
Yeah. Other people want to share an example?
I'm remembering one from high school where this one guy was really getting in my face. we just got louder and louder with each other, but neither of us wanted to fight. I could tell from his demeanor that he, you know, he was really angry. He didn't want to fight, and I was just not a fighting type either, because I always get headaches when I was getting that angry. So he came up right in my, literally right in my face like this, and I just breathed in his face. And he went, oh, yuck, and we both broke up laughing. We never did become friends, but we, you know, we tolerated each other after that.
That's good. So you changed the subject, in essence.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a good way to diffuse a conflict. Other examples?
I was in downtown Seattle once, and I looked down the block, and I could tell that there were people fighting. And so I went down there, and there was kind of a crowd around a woman, kind of a street woman, transient, who was on the ground by being kicked mercilessly by this young woman, just really being beaten up, and all people were doing nothing. And so I just stood in front of her between and put myself between the two, and I said that that would be loud enough. And boy, did she get angry at me, and she just flailed and put on a real show, but she didn't touch me. And every time she moved, I moved just to keep them separate. And that seemed to work just fine because she finally went away. But I think what's interesting about that is that what made me do that is I just don't like bullies. But part of the core of that is I was certainly willing to be violent with her if she were to throw the first punch.
Uh-huh.
But I mean, nonviolent would be my preference, and
yeah,
it worked fine. And I think it usually does work fine. But what's interesting is that the reason it works fine is because I was willing to stand there and say, not verbally,
yeah,
you have to throw the first punch.
Uh huh. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But
very courageous.
Well, I don't know about that.
Yeah, I think so. After these stories, I'd love to figure out, you know, one of the things is to figure out how people go ahead and do the courageous things that they do. And moving away from a conflict can be courageous, depending on the context that you're in. Or breathing in somebody's face can be courageous, because you're not giving into that the societal pressure, especially like in high school or something, where you are supposed to hit each other. You know. Could we have another example?
Well, when I was in high school, it really wasn't violent, but I had a teacher that picked on me, and he was the principal of the school. It was a very small school, and I was in his typing class and in his civics class. In the typing class, he'd come along and he'd put his foot up on the table, and he should be on time. He said, tie my shoe. Oh, and I'd just keep on typing gibberish because I was really upset, but I'd just keep going. And in the civics class, you know, how the rows were straight, and he would come and he'd take his eraser and he'd throw it down the floor next to my desk and say, pick it up. And I'd just sit there like this, and he'd hold the class up for 10, 15 minutes. And I just, you know, like this, I was very shy, my ears had turned beet red. And after about 2 months of this, he said, I want you to stay after class. And oh boy, I should have been tying my shoes and picking up that eraser and all this. And he said, you know, I've been picking on you a lot. And I said, well, I'm used to it. I get it at home. And he never after that, not one word. So it wasn't violent, but it was really unusual that...
Did he apologize?
Yeah. No, he never apologized. But
he admitted he'd been picking on you.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
But, I'm German-Irish, but I was raised Norwegian, so this was the only, only reaction I could come up with.
Very good.
But in a sense, that was passive resistance.
Oh, yeah.
You refused to bow down.
Yeah, it was probably a little of the German there, too.
Yes, the stubbornness. Yeah,
that's the very definition of passive resistance. Mm-hmm. You know, is to stand up for yourself by refusing to comply with these unreasonable orders.
Right. Yeah. Other examples?
I couldn't think of one example, but I tend to just disappear. I get scared. Yeah, because of the violence in other people, not usually toward myself, but just watching it. I'm afraid something's going to explode, and I just don't want to be around when it's happening. Except with my children, I'm more aggressive. The mother instinct, the survival instinct comes out there. And I'm definitely verbally aggressive. So if they come home from school over the years and tell me some story about what the teacher's done, when I was listening to him, I thought, boy, I would have gone in there if I was her mother. That type of thing, we're watching out for the respect that my children were not having. That someone was stepping on their respect. Tended to bring it back up to the level that children are also people. You know, not just children, but to be respected and so on.
Yes.
But I still tend to disappear, fight and flight. I just took it off.
Does someone have anything else they want to share with the group?
I think of things sometimes in committee meetings or perhaps planning, and there's disagreement, and I guess I tried to paraphrase back what they said, or I hear you saying, and it seems that certainly is diffusing, and I'm sure everybody's aware of that.
Yeah, the communication skills that you can use. I mean, and what she was doing, what Sarah was doing was laying it right on the line. This is exactly what I am going, I need.
Right.
I need you to stop now. Mm-hmm. And that did it. And you actually gave that message, too, to that teacher.
But I don't know how she could stand there and be ready to fight back. I turned tail and run.
But when the skills are available to you, you know some skills, so I think you have to have a certain
level
to do that, a level of ability to know you can do it. Maybe taking classes in self-defense. That was
right.
And that wouldn't help you.
And there are certainly different styles and different levels that any of us are ever going to get to.
I think it depends on everybody's individual.
Yes. Yeah.
No, there was an incident when I was working in Philadelphia. There was, I guess he was one of the librarians, Joel's librarians at another library, who was supposed to keep order among the kids. And these 12-year-olds would just not obey him ever. So he took them one by one out to the side yard and flipped them.
Wow.
After that, they all thought he was one of the guys, because he demonstrated that he had some physical prowess. He wasn't just one of these pushover librarians like I was.
And you were a good friend of his, right?
I have a friend who is extremely shy. She's large in size, and so her appearance would be different than her personality. And she tells a story of a time that she was in a bar, and a woman was giving her a problem and was in her face and wanted to fight with her. And she kept taking a step back, and the woman would take a step forward, and she'd take another step back, and the woman would come forward until she was backed up against a wall. And she finally, she just looked her right in the eye, and she said, I can only take one more step backwards, and then I'm going to have to come forward. And that was enough.
Okay.
She turned around.
Great.
But she says she'd never been more scared in her life because she didn't know that she necessarily had what it took to, what she would have done if the lady didn't have to work.
Yeah. I guess one of the reasons that I got involved in this, in nonviolence, was when I had a violent teacher in sixth grade. And this person actually, a couple years later, I knew she was mentally ill then, but no one would believe a sixth grader. So she did finally get committed a couple years later, or hopefully she got medication and stuff, I don't know. But I think the main reason I got it, and that's one of my main motivations even to this day, is that I could not leave the classroom when she was beating up on somebody. And I knew I should. I knew I should run down the hall and get the principal. But I just could not do it at that point in my life. Because I was deathly afraid of her. And so, but because of that experience, and I guess being raised in a very strong, not now, but Catholic household, where we tried to really believe what Jesus said, but it didn't necessarily get followed through on actions. And so I thought it should be in action as well as in word. And just deciding that from then on, if possible, I would not let people hit each other, not let people hurt each other. And so I've had similar experiences to Sarah's, where I've gone up to two people who are fighting and stood by and said, these were like two men or whatever, and I would say, I'm just standing here and watching to make sure that it doesn't get really hurtful. You know, whatever. Or asking to make sure, do either of you need help here?
What's the reaction if you ask that?
Well, it's none of your business, is one of your reactions, but I figure that's a whole lot better than another blow to the other guy's face. And often this is too silly, reaction. Okay, let's stop. Reaction. So, but what, Sarah?
Well, I'm just wondering about things.
Go ahead, wonder.
The whole crux of my question of nonviolence, because I certainly believe in active nonviolence, but sometimes it seems to me that in order to, when it comes down to it, you almost have to be prepared for violence in order for me to stand there, or in order for your friend to say, I'm going to have to take one step forward, or whatever it is. But at the same time, I'm not a believer in the political statement that you have to, that, you know, like this bomb is a peacemaker. It doesn't make sense to me. There's a certain, but on more of an individual level, if two people are fighting, if you're a parent and your children are fighting, you separate. And that's a certain amount of violence. And so there's a paradox there that I'm constantly trying to figure out. When is violence? When is it time to intercede physically? And does that mean it's violent? And when it does mean it's violent, is that okay? Or should you just watch the violence?
There's so many different ways to approach it. When we look at the way Gandhi defines his principles of nonviolence, the Satyagraha movement, he said people had to be peace soldiers. They had to be peace, courageous peace soldiers if you're really going against a government, especially somebody or money, economic power, they are not going to give that up easily. Mm-hmm. And that even though, and his idea was that you go ahead and you be nonviolent no matter what, and you accept the violence that's given to you and absorb it and hopefully break the chain of violence. And because you've tried to make yourself strong enough so that you could accept being beaten on without beating back, that this would provide a moral force that would sway not only people who are sort of in the middle and don't know what side to be on, but also sway your opponent to realize to change and act a different way. So it is really different. You need that courage. The same thing with Martin Luther King's principles, which he got in a main part from Gandhi. And so, but you do need to have that discipline and that courage. And it's, especially in personal places like that bar incident, what do you do then? Do you just let them, if you step back and you're going to step forward, probably that person, if you had just even moved forward, that woman moved forward after that statement, that would have been enough. She wouldn't have had to hit her or anything. Mm-hmm. But there are times when it won't work. Mm-hmm. And what do you do?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, you almost have to be ready to act, though, if you're going to be in that situation where you're interfering. You better not say it unless you're prepared to act.
Prepared to do, yeah. Prepared to do something.
Hard. I mean, that's really difficult.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want to bring up Starhawk's novel, Fifth Sacred Thing, where she describes this whole process of people not violently resisting an invading army. This is in San Francisco, an earthquake that's basically destroyed society. But
fiction, but it's...
It's fictional. But it does describe a realistic process for people to come together and actually have a successful nonviolent resistance to a violent invasion by these utterly ruthless invaders. And they did it basically by having shared values that everybody agreed on. The one symbol of their resistance was the stream that they had channeled to run right, the open supply of water right down the middle of the city that anyone could take free. And the way the oppressors were going to gain control of society was to dam up the stream and charge everybody for the water. Well, they had previously stored water in all their houses and refused to pay the oppressor. And then employed nonviolent persuasion on soldiers and actually convinced them, that not without human cost, not without some people getting killed. The violent authorities escalated and the peace people at each stage had prepared themselves to be violent, to be killed. And yet, and some of them were children who got killed. And there was this one family. They just went right down the line, killing each one. Mm-hmm. And finally, when they got to the 5-year-old, the sergeant who was doing the killing just broke. And by that time, a number of other soldiers had already deserted to the other side. Mm-hmm. It was quite believable to me that the way they were able to mobilize psychological pressure, mm-hmm. and in another word, moral force. Mm-hmm. To kind of turn people over, because they made it obvious to the soldiers that their lifestyle was a lot better than the awful environment the soldiers had come from. And so a lot of them were happy to change over. And finally, at the end, there was a rebellion. And they killed their own general, and everybody, all the soldiers turned over. They either ran away or they became part of the new society.
Sounds like a utopian story.
It was. But it's a very good one. Yeah, for a good one. There are lots of really good, I mean, other good tales that are true. Where was it? Sweden, where during World War II, the king...
Oh, Denmark.
Denmark. The king of Denmark. During World War II, the Jews were told to wear yellow stars. And they hadn't had to do this in Denmark. And then one day, the order came down from the Nazis who had invaded and taken over Denmark, that everybody had to wear the yellow star the next day, every Jewish person. And so the king of Denmark came out for his morning stroll with his yellow star on. And then everybody in the whole, lots and lots of people there did it so that it just disarmed. The Nazis couldn't work as fast because they didn't know who the people were they wanted to get. So, would anybody else like to share how or why you believe that nonviolence is useful and important? So, a lot of times, nonviolence is. I'd say the majority of people in the world at this point don't necessarily believe in nonviolence as a way of life. but that the using of tactics of nonviolence is seen as more positive than going the violent route first. But some people will definitely still see that the violent road is the way to take if the other ways don't succeed. I wish that in our government that we would use more and more of the nonviolent tactics that we have, the sanctions and the boycotts and the persuasion forces that we have, instead of hunting right away to go and invade someplace.
Well, it seems that a lot of governmental actions are based on legalism, yes, rules being violated as opposed to any kind of vision of what's right and wrong, which would be the moral force that you're talking about. Yeah. We're such individualists that we hesitate to impose such a moral vision on each other, but we really can't have a society without one.
I think you're seeing more of nonviolence as a new entrance being set in a lot of places too, as a mediation between the forces that are fighting against each other these days.
Yeah, a separating barrier.
And they come and try to just say, look, I'm watching this, please.
Right, until I get
stuff.
Yeah.
Chuck out the wall. That is, for me, the epitome of nonviolence out of these new entrances.
Yes, yeah.
And that's something that's coming from all of the, well, at least the countries that belong to the United Nations. So it seems at least that the countries that belong to the UN are thinking about how we can stop things on a level.
So yeah. It's definitely becoming more of a reality. Yeah.
But violence can express itself in different ways than that. Would be my thrust as well, and what would be desirable. I think of this thing in Haiti, and the sanctions have created a different kind of violence on a greater number of people.
Yes.
Given a practical moral choice, this is against my general inclinations, but I would think it would be easier to take down militarily the faction who is the cause of the problem rather than the whole population.
Right, they are suffering from those sanctions.
Really,
yeah.
I don't have an answer that bothers me greatly. And I don't want to get too localized in political concern, but the response to Cuba seems to be somewhat the same way, too. Make all the people suffer. Our problem is with the government, it's not with the people. Mm-hmm. And it's a different kind of violence. Mm-hmm. We're not directly shooting anybody, but we're making it harder than the use. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I absolutely agree. But we look at Iran, or was it Iran?
Yeah.
Gulf War, wherever that was. Iraq, sorry. and we did our invasion, and we did do sanctions before that, but our invasion ruined their infrastructure in so great that now the suffering is happening.
That's right.
All the children and all the families of civilians who we, during the war, we claimed we didn't hit anything that had civilian targets. And, you know, here it is in the aftermath. It's, so let us all think of for the next years those kind of things that we can do that can persuade people to change and without hurting, inadvertently hurting somebody else.
And those things have to be taught.
Uh-huh.
At our school, we have a, it's called CALSO, that's a, it has 9 steps to go through kind of before you resort to violence.
Uh-huh.
You know, and you have the choice to walk away, or you can talk it out with them, or, you know, talk it out. So you're trying to give them options before they do that.
Good.
And it's solved a lot of problems. You know, we have the small problems which they take care of. And of course, if they're in bodily harm or whatever, then they go to somebody, stop the tattletaling and stuff like that, you know.
Uh-huh.
Because when they come to you, we'll always say, you know, well, have you tried this? And So you have, we found you have to teach the children how to act non-violently. Ways to go about it.
Yeah.
Because
kids see violence all over.
Mm-hmm. And there are other options besides violent acts.
Unfortunately, the non-violence doesn't make very good TV cartoons.
No.
At least not the kind that sell.
Right. So it's, a lot of people don't like the program, but I think it's great to at least put it back on them. Have you tried this?
Absolutely, yeah.
And then if they've, you know, tried everything, well then it's time to intercede them, you know, on a different level. But it's always, have you?
Yeah, so not only taking responsibility themselves, but also the teachers and everybody are behind the same program so that they can really know that they'll be watched over if they haven't, if that doesn't succeed.
You're talking about grade school children. Mm-hmm. People start down in kindergarten.
It's good.
One thing about violence thing is not, especially with children, is that they don't often believe somebody comes in, and you have to make a point of saying, I'm the believer here. You can come and tell me anything, basically. But they kind of say, oh, it can't be that bad. And oftentimes, oh, come on, you want me to call your teacher? I'll find out what's right. That type of stuff. The teacher and the kid. That's difficult. Yeah. I found that humor usually breaks up a lot of that bone.
Yeah,
just if you can make it a humor situation without somebody in your face.
Yes.
And downgrading for one part of it. And everybody laughs because it's just, you know, it's kind of, you've got the adrenaline up on both sides. And you can either, you know, let it go like this or you stop laughing and you let it go also.
Can you give me an example?
Oh, I've used it. I know I've used it within the family a lot between the children and just, you know, fighting about something. I can't think of anything specific, but I know I've used it a lot because I think I have a lot of humor. And I just try to, you know, say, well, those shoes are too big anyway, or do you really like the color, or, you know, I can't give you a specific one, but
good.
It's deactivation.
Uh-huh. Does anybody here see nonviolence as separate from what they usually do? Or is it pretty much it sounds to me like this group says, this is pretty much what I believe and I try to do it.
I think that I'm in a really interesting situation in my life because I'm a police officer. And I try to use as much nonviolence as I can, but there just comes a point where people force us to be physical with them. But so it's interesting because I prefer not to grab someone, but I will. But what's interesting is what you were saying with humor is I think when you are a police officer long enough, you learn to interact with people. When you walk into a house where people are very angry and they've been fighting, or they're fighting when you get there, of course we have the ability to say, let's step outside. But you learn how to distract people and get people to calm down. And the other thing we learn, if just by learning that, is if we want, we can learn how to make people angry too.
Uh-huh.
And you can play people like a pistol. But it's learning how to do that that gives you the skill to calm people down and knowing when, you know, separate and let them vent and then use a little humor and then maybe a little reason. When they're really angry, but once they're down, they can be home. So it's really an interesting thing, I think, the dance between violence and nonviolence that at least I do in my vocation.
Yes.
And that's really interesting. The other thing that's fascinating to me I get so much flack from people who are supposedly having, that are in the nonviolence world, and they're going to do this demonstration against Bush or whoever happens to be coming through town. And then I become the target, and I, now because I'm in a uniform, and the garbage I receive, and the spitting in the face, and the, you know, I'm this and I'm that, and you know, that's how I guess I put restraint, you know.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It's
just my job.
Yeah. So it's an interesting, I call it a dance that I try to do.
Yes.
But it's a constant challenge to be as nonviolent as I can, still perform my job when people aren't going to listen, and then not respond if I don't have a enforcement action to take, if they're going to be a butthead to me.
Right, right.
You were the violent pacifist.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I think they're on the
side. Not violent pacifists, but they tend to be the more radical political parties who do that kind of stuff. The real pacifists
are standing there, right?
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
It's very interesting. I was at that big demonstration against Hillary Clinton several weeks ago in Seattle. It was really interesting to watch the crowd interacting with the police officer.
You were there for Hillary, but...
Well, not exactly.
Or in the middle, right? Right.
I was definitely opposite of this howling mob that was around me. Yes. But, you know, watching, I mean, I've often been on the other side where I was part of the howling mob.
Was that a spontaneous dynamic?
That they were there. Oh, no, that was all organized. The whole thing was orchestrated. But anyway, that's a whole other story. But the police were very successful in calming these folks down, laughing and joking with people. You know, they really knew what they were doing. I was impressed.
Yeah, I'm impressed.
That's part of your training now, Lisa.
Yeah. Most of it's on the job training, though, because it's interesting. And my other observation would be that some people really like to fight. I mean, that just is what they want to do. That they just
want
to fight, and they seem to get some pleasure out of it. And of course, some of those people are police officers, unfortunately. But that's just true for any job you get into. But that's just this. That's it.
Yeah.
It would seem that if you had people wanting to fight, that you might get a couple of things. If you have the apparent clout, it seems like you're going to make the situation go the way you want it to go, just because you have the clout. Mm-hmm. It's size. And someone who's sitting down is challenged by some little guy, and this guy gets up and rolls himself and just towers over the little guy. The little guy might back off a little bit. Mm-hmm. But there was a fellow at high school that I know that he was not a very large person, but he found out that if he threw the first punch, then he could clean up on that guy. He could stun him, and then he could do whatever he wanted to. He found, he realized that. So now he's the guy going around after football games and basketball games picking fights. Mm-hmm. So he can pound on somebody. And he did that one time too many, because he slugged the football player from the other visiting team in the face. And the guy just shook his head a little bit and grabbed this little puppy, grabbed him by the back of his head and pushed his face in the gravel lot and just ground his face in the lot. And that guy decided to join the Marines a couple weeks later. He says, he lost face, you might say. He threw the first punch but didn't work this time.
Uh-huh.
And he really got... That guy just threw it. He really needed a hamburger out. And so he left town. But he had the clout, see, for a while.
Yes.
He thought. Yeah.
Well, he was successful doing what he wanted to do. But why the guy won't pick fights all the time?
But I think, you know, it's amazing what clout you can have when you're acting restrained and when you're using your sense of humor and your... everything, you know, when you're a lot of times I've been a peacekeeper at a demonstration and confronted with, you know, this drunk person who is really wanting a fight, wanting to scream and yell at whoever it happens to be. And to just to walk up to them and make eye contact and really talk to them and listen and laugh and get that, that's a lot of clout, even though it doesn't look like clout. I think we do that a lot. Everybody does that a lot in daily life.
There's that great story about the Aikido artist on the subway train in Japan.
Yeah, no, it was in New York City.
Was it?
Uh-huh, it was in the Bronx, where a young Aikido artist, a young Aikido person who knows how to do Aikido.
Martial arts.
Yeah. Martial arts, yeah. So the essence of it is supposedly that you just disarm your opponent.
You go with the flow, and your opponent's energy,
right,
depending on how much they're using against you, is what flips them.
Yeah.
You
just right.
Redirect.
Leverage. Redirect their energy. And so the young guy saw a really threatening guy come on their little car on the subway train and confront, I think, an elderly couple really violently, and I think he was drunk as well. And this guy decided he was going to go up and confront the guy and flip him, you know, get rid of him, get, you know, hold him till they get to the next station. And then another gentleman was there.
Yeah, he was just about to do it, and the drunk guy noticed him standing up and said, aha, here's somebody
to fight against,
you know,
to
all ready to fight. And all of a sudden they heard this terrific shout, hey!
And another man in his kimono, a Japanese person, but here in New York, in the Bronx, I think, just came over and started talking to the guy. And it turns out that this other man was a real Aikido person.
Master.
A master. Mm-hmm. And that the essence is to become friends with your opponent.
Yeah, the old guy called him over, befriended him. He figured out what the guy was drinking and talked about how he enjoyed a glass of it too sometimes, and they quickly kind of drew him into a conversation, got him to sit down, and the young Aikido guy, when he got off the train, saw the drunk guy had his head in the guy's lap crying. he disarmed him. And he was just ready to do that. He had the time. You know, he had the few resources that he needed, which was the ability to empathize with somebody like in that way, draw him out, and as you were saying, calm him down, pull him off that wild plane.
So there are, the things that we do in our daily life, the best ways that we act toward each other, listening, you know, these simple things, can be used in other circumstances which are much more scary to diffuse violence. And I hope that you'll remember some more of the things that you did in your life and talk to your friends and your families about them. Because the more information people have about things that went right when they chose not to go the bullying route or the hitting route or the shaking the kid, stop it now, route. We need to share these stories with everybody so that more people can stand in between the kicker and the victim. More people can stand.